afternoon. We're going to open a hearing, a very quick hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 468 before we do anything else this afternoon. So that hearing is open. I'm going to ask Tom Gallagher if he'll come up. This is a very simple little surveyor bill, and it's something I don't even think I need Judith to give me a background on. Tom, you can tell us what this is about real quick, would you?
Very quickly, Mr. Chair, Tom Gallagher and Chuck Pearson representing the Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. Chuck has got written testimony for you that will beef up your record. But what this simply does is it... I think I'll let Chuck go through it very quickly, and then
okay.
I'll do it fast.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill, currently, Oregon law requires geodetic control, and I don't even want to get into what geodetic surveying control is, but there's two different types. There's mapping control and control that's used for infrastructure location, geographic information systems, and the like. In many counties, we've got our own high-precision geodetic control networks that have taken the place of all of this other stuff that's being filed. If there are public funds involved, a report is required to be filed for mapping and geodetic control. We're proposing to eliminate the mapping control outright and to, by ordinance or resolution, allow the, or by resolution or order, allow the governing body to waive the requirements for geodetic control. This will save the public sector some money in having to prepare reports that are of absolutely no value to the county and save me a lot of filing space in the county. And then there's another small part of the bill that provides that in setting a monument for a subdivision or partition plat, we can waive a particular monument from being set when it's impracticable to do so. Right now, the law is pretty strict, and we're just getting a little more flexibility.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Tom Gallagher again. This bill has gone through the Professional Land Surveyors Committee, which is made up of county surveyors and private land surveyors, and we have been through the whole process in consultation with the people that do the geodetic monuments. So that's why I think it's been worked out. You have no opposition that I know of.
There is no opposition that I know of to the bill. Any other comments? Any questions? This is a... simple little bill that helps you do your job better.
Yes.
And that's the idea, I think. If there are no questions, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 468 and open a work session on Senate Bill 468. Can I have a motion from anybody?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 468 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 468 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation. I'm going to ask the committee assistant if he would call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 468 is approved and sent to the floor. Is there anybody that would like to carry this bill? Senator George said he would like to carry it. You better get somebody like Tom Gallagher to write what this is about so we actually understand what, so we can explain it on the floor. I'm going to take a few seconds. No, we're going to close the work session on 468. Before I open another one, I'm going to give Senator Walker about 90 seconds to follow up on something from the hearing that we had on SAFE the other day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some materials to pass out to the committee because I spoke to you about Stan Long giving employee bonuses and days paid vacation for reducing their claims back in 1990 and 91, one apiece, okay. Yes. And also I discussed with you that the Department of Insurance and Finance, as it was known then, had also done a study that SAFE was denying claims against the policies of the department. And I also, so I presented you with that, and I presented you also with committee minutes from a March 12, 1992 hearing from the Senate Committee on Labor, It says 1991 on the first page, but that's incorrect. It's an interim committee from 1992. And that committee goes into detail by Gary Weeks is the person representing the Department of Insurance and Finance, and he talks at length about this issue, and he talks about the cost shifting of workers' comp into the private market when they deny claims. And these are things that I found in the archives that I thought were important for our committee. And finally, there was a great deal of discussion at our last hearing about Ms. McAllister, who had indicated to me that SAFE was engaged in bonuses, providing bonuses to their fraud unit. I read through that material, and it is there were goals that the department met, but there were not that they had to meet, but there were not bonuses paid that I could see. But I also did not want to leave this committee with the impression, if you did read that transcript, that Ms. McAllister did anything fraudulent. Ms. McAllister actually won a judgment from SAFE Corporation for $61,000 for malicious prosecution and defamation of character in that case. And she asked for a letter of apology and only got a letter of regret. But I did want to make sure that it was clear on the record that she was not convicted of anything she was accused of. And I do want to make sure that we know that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that opportunity.
Thank you. I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 498. And I'm going to ask Judith to describe what 498 does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 498 is a bill that would limit contracts between the Oregon State Lottery and video lottery game retailers to terms such that compensation to the video game lottery game retailers that will not exceed 15% of net receipts. Net receipts are defined in the measure to mean the amount of money received by the retailer from the operation of the video lottery games after payment of prizes. These would apply to contracts entered into or renewed only on or after the effective date of the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not heard from Fiscal Revenue on this bill, and we do not have a subsequent referral.
Okay. Thank you. So as we get started, I just wanted to comment that this is not a radical new idea. This is something that I've heard talked about for at least my 13 years in the legislature. Of course, the percentage always moves around a little bit. But the reason I decided to have a hearing and to think about this a little bit out loud is because this is a state that now has a $1 billion structural deficit every 2 years, every biennium. We go through the same thing. We come in here and we chop up programs and we further impoverish our schools and further impoverish health care and programs for preschool kids and so on. And for that reason, it's my intention just to think about this and to begin a process of listening to the arguments in this setting, in this hearing room, with this bill that's been assigned to my committee. And with that, I'm going to ask the author of the bill, Senator Charlie Ringo, to come and talk about his bill for a minute, and several people he may have decided to bring with him. I know there are some here that want to talk about the bill, so Senator Ringo, welcome. We're glad you're here this afternoon.
Thank you very much. For the record, Senator Charlie Ringo, Senator from Washington County in Northwest Portland. It's good to be before this committee. I introduced this bill because this issue has become such a political football. And I think it makes sense, instead of to have a commission that's constantly subject to pressures as to what should the right number be, just to build this into statute. I would note that the bill says it applies to any future contracts. To the extent we have existing contracts, I don't think we should try to interfere with those existing contracts. I firmly believe in honoring contracts. But rather, it sets the goalpost as to what we should do for future contracts. All the research I've done says that 15% is a number that gives a reasonable rate of return to bar owners and tavern owners that have the video machines in them. It's a reasonable rate of return. Currently, Some of those bar owners and tavern owners are receiving returns that are far above reasonable. They're making a killing in terms of profit, and that's money that's coming directly out of schools and directly out of other programs our state needs for the citizens of Oregon. Where do I get the number 15%? That's a number that has been put forth in a variety of different contexts, going all the way back to 1994. There's an audit from the Secretary of State at that time, Phil Kiesling, who indicated that there's a chart I'm looking at that says the chart below indicates that even at the lowest commission rate of 10%, the average retailer in each category not only would be profitable, but also would make a profit margin above the industry average. I'm not going to go through all the data right now. Frankly, there's a lot of people that are a lot more knowledgeable than me as to why the 15% is a reasonable rate of return would at the same time, on the one hand, would ensure a reasonable rate of return, on the other hand, would be fair to the citizens of the state. So I appreciate your hearing the testimony. Again, I hope you listen carefully to the people that are more experts than I am as to how you justify the 15%. But again, I think it's something we need to build into statute so this quits becoming a political football. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from Senator Ringo?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to go through this in the order that people signed up this afternoon.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Oh, Representative Rosenbaum. Have to always make room for representatives, and some of them manage to sneak in, and I don't see them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure that's not a comment on my stature.
No.
I guess.
I it's more to do with the blind old chairman. If you know my wife, I would never comment on anybody being vertically challenged or anything of that sort. If I did, she'd cut me down to her size in a hurry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am State Representative Diane Rosenbaum and representing Hess District 42 in Portland, and I'm very pleased today to appear in front of you to testify in support of Senate Bill 498. I think really this bill is fundamentally about choices and priorities, and I know that on this side of the building in particular, there has already been a lot of discussion about looking at the budget in terms of priorities, and so I think this fits in very well with that kind of analysis. I think that particularly the sponsor of the bill already talked about the fact, and so did the chair, that we're facing a serious problem with the budget and funding, and I would specifically point to education funding and put a suggestion to you that subsidizing bars and taverns can hardly be seen as more important when we're facing cutting school days and increasing class sizes. And I think in light of Oregon's continuing budget crisis, we really do need to take a hard look at this bill because I think it does provide one of the pieces of a solution to a very serious problem. In 2004, video lottery sales brought in a record $530.9 million in gross sales. Last year, $169 million went to the lottery retailers. And now, by the expansion to line games, this bill has the potential to bring in an extra $146 million. $92.8 million of that is not dedicated and could be used for our schools. This is much-needed revenue right now when we're facing such a dire situation with our education systems. And I think it's pretty clear that taverns could still make a healthy profit if they received the 15% of net sales that the bill calls for. The costs associated with having these machines is really minimal. And that's true because Oregon is unique among states in that it owns and maintains the lottery machines, and that really does minimize the retailer cost. A retailer in Eugene named Jim Trennell described the work of a lottery retailer as follows. Here's what it takes to manage the lottery, he said. You take the money out of the machines, you go and put it in the bank. The Lottery Commission itself recently hired an economist from the well-respected Eco Northwest to determine what would be a fair compensation rate and they calculated a break-even point at $10,000. So at the current compensation rate of 29%, retailers are receiving an average of $68,000 in annual compensation, and that's much higher than the cost of operating the machines. In fact, it's nearly seven times higher. I think that we really need to take a hard look at the threats to that we hear from some retailers and organizations that they would drop the games if the commission rate were lowered. The only reason that this bill would cause retailers not to participate is if the retailers are only making money right now from the lottery commissions. While some taverns may rely excessively on lottery proceeds, the purpose of the lottery really is to generate money for public programs, education, and at the head of that list, and not to subsidize taverns that are struggling and would otherwise go out of business. If these retailers are primarily generating income from lottery compensation rates, in fact, they would be in violation of Oregon law, which calls for a dominant use or dominant purpose of the taverns being to act as taverns, not as casinos. So I would very, very strongly urge you to look favorably on Senate Bill 498 to fund education rather than to make a choice about lining the pockets of bars and taverns that I think our children really need to be at the head of the line when it comes to making those choices, and this is one that I hope you will be able to make. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Like myself, you have an urban district, and I know your district well enough to know that you have a fair number of bars, taverns, restaurants that have machines in them. Have you had conversations with some of the owners in your own district about the what would to me be somewhat of a kind of difficult thing to argue if you're not dominantly used as a video poker thing, then why do you need the big subsidy? You know what I'm saying? On the one hand, if the subsidies can't be lowered because they couldn't make it without it, then how do you say that this is a thriving bar or restaurant and would be a thriving bar or restaurant even without the video poker machine? Sounds like you can't have it two ways. Have you had conversations?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question, and I certainly have talked to owners in my district. I can't say that they're very fond of the approach of this bill, but at the same time, I think that your point is well taken, that if, in fact, they're struggling and this is the only thing that's keeping them in business, then it really is debatable whether it's a business that should be surviving, because they should be able to survive on other than just the lottery proceeds, and we would hope that the lottery proceeds were supplementing what was a pretty healthy rate of return on sales of food or drink, which is really primarily what they should be getting by on, and this should be in addition to that. So I think the point in my testimony is that really if all they're doing is getting by on gambling proceeds, then really the law does not even call for that to be an allowable purpose, because they would be operating as a casino rather than as a business of another sort, and we don't allow for that. So.
Okay. Thank you. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rosenbaum, have you considered what the cost would be if the state just took the next logical step and just eliminated these providers, these contractors, and just set up our own operation? I'm sure that the cost would be enormous, probably exceeding 20 or 25 or 30% for us to run these operations ourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator George, I cannot address the dollar figures. I have heard people suggest that approach, but I'm not suggesting that approach. I really think we need to look at a legitimate rate of return for the businesses so that they can be profitable, but I think that the studies have shown that they could be profitable at a lesser rate, thereby generating money that we sorely need right now for education and other public purposes.
Thanks. Follow-up question?
I'll allow that, yes.
Okay, thanks. we contract with a lot of folks to do a lot of things, and you mentioned education, and we have a contract with our teachers, and we ask them to come in, and they do a certain job, and we compensate them accordingly. Are you willing also to ask school teachers to take a cut in pay in order to, to do the same things that you're talking about for education? If we're going to ask one group to take a cut, why wouldn't we take some from someone else? We have cities and counties that we've taken money from them, and we've impacted them greatly. Are you willing to take that step?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator George, I think that if there was evidence that teachers specifically were being excessively compensated, then the public would be demanding that we take a look at that. I think that there is a process for negotiating teacher salaries that elected school board members, elected officials, as are we, are looking at for the public interest in negotiating those rates. And so I would assume that process is working as the voters intended it to.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for
coming.
Thank
you.
I have been told that Director Dale Penn is here. Is that correct? I haven't had a chance to meet you. Could you come up and just chat with us for a few minutes? My apologies. I have not had the opportunity to meet you before. So I appreciate you being willing to come and answer a few questions that arise. And in fact, probably we might ask a few more questions later on. But I wanted you to set a little bit of a context. I know the lottery got set up a long time ago, and a lot of people don't know the history from beginning to end. How was the original amount decided when they were originally setting up the lottery as to what the percentage rate would be, and how do we compare with other states across the United States in terms of the amount that retailers get for the lottery?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm really not prepared to give you information because I wasn't planning on testifying at all today,
okay.
But I have some knowledge about that and be happy to try to answer your questions,
yeah,
as best I can. Because this is a complicated issue, and as you know, at the present time, we are in the midst, the Lottery Commission is in the midst of trying to set a commission rate for line games. And that is the process under the law. And so we're engaging in that. And yesterday we had a commission meeting, and we'll have a public hearing March 25th, and we will, the commission has set a special hearing date on April 7th to actually adopt a commission rate for line game products. But to give you some history, the legislature, when the video lottery product was authorized and was requested by statute, had a direction to the lottery to have a study done. And so there was a study, and the study established 35% as an amount that would be appropriate. Part of that was that historically at that time there were machines out throughout Oregon, but it was a private industry. And at that time I was a district attorney, and one of the problems was that many of these machines, although they were not supposed to be used for gambling, in fact they were being used for gambling, and we termed them gray machines, and when we could prove it, we would prosecute people. And I prosecuted people back in the 80s and 90s for having gambling machines and paying on credits. It was a very difficult process. You had to do undercover investigations. We were just scratching the surface. And as a law enforcement person, I'll tell you that I was overjoyed when the state said, we're going to close out the gray machine industry in Oregon, and the only gambling machine that we will be a lottery machine. And it will be something that we know is certified, is tested, has integrity, and is not being manipulated by someone.
And so that's how the lottery got into this business. Now, at that time, we didn't have any customers. And so clearly part of the 35% was the fact that we were going to an industry, in this situation, bar and restaurant industry, who had liquor licenses. And why that? Because we wanted to restrict the access to these machines. We didn't want people under 21 to have access. And so they thought an easy way to do that was to say that only those organizations that had liquor licenses, which would restrict access to those above 21, they would qualify. At least that's the first cut. Then they have to go through a security investigation by the lottery, which is quite extensive. They have to document that they have a business ongoing, and a variety of other things. But what we really did was we went out and we purchased a customer base from zero to all of a sudden we have a customer base. Now, we also changed the business model for that industry. And that's one of the complicating issues here. Because when you're talking to someone who has not had video lottery in the past, and you truly are just saying, if you're going to bring this new product into your restaurant or to bar, then you might be talking about, well, what really is the profit margin for me for this machine? And I have to put out a little bit of money to do this or that, and I'll have this electrical bill, and I'll have insurance costs, and I'll have these things, but I can document that. But that isn't really the point facing Oregon right now. We're talking about an industry that's been in place for 12 years, that businesses have been bought and sold, that they have been financed based upon the fact that there are lottery contracts in place signed with the state of Oregon. And you know, you're supposed to be able to believe that you sign a contract with the state of Oregon, the state will fulfill its contract. And we just signed a contract 6 months ago that's a six-year contract for poker. So there's that complicator. We had yesterday at our public hearing, we had one retailer, and it really wasn't open for public testimony, but one retailer who happens to be a Linn County commissioner, and he owns a bowling alley in Albany. And he just said, you know, I understand the difficulties of the political issues at play here, and the fact that the state's budget is in trouble. And I know all of those things. But you know, last year, when I signed a contract with the state, I felt like I could trust this contract for the next 6 years. And you know, I went out and I borrowed money, and I'm pouring concrete in the next 2 weeks for a new bowling center. And part of that equation is the video lottery. And if you go in and cut those proceeds in half, I'm going to tell you, I'm in trouble. You may have seen some publicity in the news just in the last few days about Elmer's Restaurants, a chain of restaurants, and they have individual owners, but the employees have been working on purchasing Elmer's Restaurants. And Elmer's is one of those vendors in the last 2 or 3 years that really hadn't had video in the past. They moved into that market along with Sherry's Restaurants and some others. But Elmer's was in the process of selling to a group of employees. They were supposed to close their deal last Wednesday. Last Tuesday, I announced my proposal for rates. And if you saw that, what I did was I said, we need to fulfill the contract for poker, when we're going to have to reprogram our central system to accomplish that. And so we're moving forward on that so we can keep that poker contract in place. However, because we have that contract, and because Lion Games is a special game, it will be successful and popular, and it resides on the same machines that we already have out there, I can bring a lower rate in for Lion Games, because I understand that you will have this other rate for poker games. And so I propose 15% in the context of ratifying the poker contract at 28.8% blended rate, and combining those together, I believe that was appropriate. My commission is very concerned about that, and that was, if you read the Oregonian article today, that's what you would read. And clearly, we have a large number of retailers that are on the line. And I would disagree with the testimony you just heard about that these retailers are violating the law. We do monitoring of retailers, and once someone gets to a 50% level, we're going to go in and we're going to watch that individual. And over the years, Representative Lim asked me this question when I was here a few weeks ago, so I went and researched it. We'd have 33 retailers out of 2,000 over that 10-year period that have been up against the 60% dominant use amount. And we have worked with all of them, either to get them lower or we've pulled their machines. But 33 out of 2,000 over that period of time is actually a very small number. So that is something we watch. But what has to be brought into an analysis here is that the business model has changed, as I've described. When I was talking about Elmer's restaurant, the fact here, they were going to try to make this purchase. They had their financing, they were ready to go, and they were going to sign that deal on Wednesday. They came and met with me on Tuesday and said, well, look, what are you going to do? What is really the rate that you're going to propose? When I told them my rate, they had to go back and say, we've got to cancel this purchase. That's a dramatic change for us. Now, I did read that they were able, based upon the news article and the rather dramatic change in position I was proposing, they were able to get an extension until March 10th. And maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't. But I bring that forward just to say this is a very complex issue. And in my press release that I put out last week, I gave some examples of the fact that the retailer network is absolutely vital to Oregon and now to the state's budget. They produced $600 million of funding that is in the budget this biennium. They are projected to produce $660 million in the next biennium, and that's not counting line games. The vast majority of those dollars goes to education right now, and clearly the mandate that I've been given is we need to protect that funding stream. And rather than talking about $120 million or an additional $90 million or any of that stuff, we've got to protect that $660 million because that's there, and that's base funding. So that's why I tried to support the poker contract. But line games is something different, and it is something new, and it is something that can bring additional dollars. Although we've been given a goal of 120 additional million just based upon line games. That's an aggressive goal that we have. So I know that's a rambling answer, but I'm trying to give you some of that background, some of how we got to 35, and some of the complexities of trying to move.
Thank you very much, Dale. I'm glad you painted that picture for us, because it isn't simple. I've never thought it would be simple. And if everything was simple, we wouldn't have to have hearings in the first place. I don't think that Representative Rosenbaum really said that anybody was doing anything illegal. She just indicated that if, in fact, they didn't have an existing business. I have a lot of people that want to testify, but I want
I'll do short answers.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Just a very brief question, and that is, how do we, and this was one of my questions originally, how do we compare to other states? Other states have obviously got video poker.
Well, when you look at other states, we pay far smaller commissions than other states. Now, that doesn't really answer the question very well, because Oregon is a little bit different than other states, because we do have a central system where we purchase the machines, we own the machine, the state of Oregon, the lottery. Now, our retailers do minor repairs, and they have to keep them up, and they process the dollars for us. They do bookkeeping. There's a lot of work that goes in play with it. But these other states typically have machines that are owned by the retailers, and they do have much higher percentages of payouts. So we are the lowest in the United States. There's only 7 states, I believe, that have video lottery, and I think we're the lowest of those. Canada comes into play, and that's where you get into discussion about, are we more similar to Canada? And that's because the Canadian provinces own their machines. And the rates in Canada range from 15% to 22.5%. And it depends on the situation. And you can look at Canada, and that is one of the debates that we had yesterday in front of the commission about, is Canada a good example? It is a foreign country. They do speak the same language. They do things very, very similarly. But the tax structure and other things, people would argue on, is that a good example? They started at 35 at the same time that we started at 35, and they've had a changing over the years until they've gotten to this range of 15 to 22.5. That's a large range. We are now at 28.8 after a 10% cut just 6 months ago, and I think everyone understands that we're going to come below that, whether it's my proposal or some other combination. But that's how it works together.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. A brief question. Go ahead. Yes,
I will. Thanks. Dale, when you were before the Revenue Committee,
yes,
we had the almost identical discussion. I think it's notable to remind everyone that we are the lowest in commission rates. But the other thing was is that I noticed in Representative Rosenbaum's presentation to us, she talked about a certain amount of money, but the total amount of dollars that go through the process and the lottery, could you give everyone that number? I think that might be informative for everyone.
Well, the total amount that we transferred to the state, or
total roll through the machines, yeah.
Well, when you get churn value going in machines, that they are astronomical numbers, and I can't remember it off the top of my head. I'm sorry, Senator, but it's a lot of money. That's one thing. You talk about $1 billion rather than millions or hundreds of millions. But the other point that I think comes up in comparing us to other states is that we do transfer more gross dollars for the product than the other states, except for West Virginia, that does have a casino operation that we do not. But this, we can throw a stat for just about any issue you want to discuss, but I'm sorry I rambled. I'm happy to answer other questions or respond to other questions at a later time.
Thank you for coming, and if you have time and you want to answer other questions as they might arise, we'll be glad to call you back. What I do want to do is give each person that has signed up an opportunity to speak. I'm going to probably invite people up two at a time. The first person on the list is Steve Novick, and the second one on the list is Andy Jordan, I think. I'm trying to read that. Okay. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Should I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony. My name is Steve Novick of Portland, Oregon, and I am a private citizen and became interested in this issue several years ago. I believe that this legislation is appropriate and necessary because over the past 11 years, the Oregon Lottery has proven itself to be a rogue agency which consistently violates the law and requires legislative supervision. I want to add to that Director Penn has demonstrated in the last couple of weeks that he is far and away the most responsible person ever associated with the lottery, and the proposal that he made recently deserves high commendation. But 11 years of experience indicates that the Oregon Lottery as an institution, for reasons I don't quite understand, cannot be trusted to do its legal duty. The Oregon Lottery, in terms of paying commissions to video poker retailers, is required by statute to maximize revenue for the state while providing the retailers a reasonable rate of return. Now, in effect, what that means is they're supposed to behave like a business. A business is supposed to make as much money as it can, and it's supposed to pay its contractors enough for it make it worth their while to do business with them, but no more. Last year, when the Oregon Lottery set its current contracts, which wound up with the retailers getting an average rate of 28.8%, they started off doing exactly the right thing. They hired the respected economics firm Eco Northwest to do a study, and they asked Eco Northwest, how much do we need to pay a retailer for the retailer to get a reasonable rate of return? And Eco Northwest found that when you look at the cost of doing business to a tavern, the cost of having the machines, meaning the sort of rental value of the space the machines take up, the cost of doing minor modifications to the business to accommodate moving the machines in, the cost of telephone taxes, amusement taxes, when you add all those costs up, any retailer that's making $10,000 a year is making a reasonable rate of return, which Eco-Northwest defined as about 15%. Eco-Northwest also studied the question of, do video poker taverns have more employees than non-video poker, than taverns without video poker? Because they wanted to get at whether significant labor costs are involved in having video poker. And they found no. The taverns with video poker did not have more employees than taverns without video poker. So they concluded that the labor costs, if any, were negligible. So the lottery commissions the study. Eco-Northwest says if you pay them $10,000, they're making a reasonable profit. A few weeks later, the lottery approves a contract which gives the average tavern $68,000 a year, seven times the amount necessary for them to make a reasonable profit. The lottery did not explain what rate of return it thought the retailers were getting, because obviously if it had, it would have had to say the rate of return was hundreds of percent. The lottery did not repudiate the Eco Northwest study or do another study. It simply said, well, we need to pay them $10,000 to then make a profit. Let's pay them $68,000. As to the issue of maximizing revenue, the Oregon Lottery last year specifically acknowledged that its contract would not maximize revenue. Because originally, the lottery considered adopting a contract which would give an average commission rate of 26.7%. Director Brenda Rockland said that compared to the pre-existing rate, which was 32%, that change would have raised $146 million over 6 years for state services. The lottery's estimate of the 28.8% rate it ultimately approved was that over 6 years it would raise $111 million. So the lottery acknowledged that it decided to give away $35 million in the space of a few weeks, and it never made any attempt to justify that. So this is an agency which just last year decided we're not going to say what the rate of return is, because if we did, we'd have to acknowledge it's hundreds of percent, and we are deliberately giving away $35 billion with no excuses. This is consistent with the previous practice of the Oregon Lottery. As Director Penn said, there was a study done in 1991 to decide how much to pay the retailers by a firm called Talbot and Corvola. And Talbot and Corvola said, we're making this up, we're stabbing in the dark, we have no idea, but we think based on no information that 35% is reasonable. Then a year later, an economist named Green, after the games had come online, did a new study that said, I still think 35% is reasonable. Then in 1994, two new studies were done, one by the Secretary of State, one by a legislative committee, which is done by an economist named Joe Courtwright, and both of them concluded that Green had dramatically overestimated labor costs, he had dramatically overestimated the space the machines take up, and that really it was reasonable, a reasonable profit would be had for retailers if they got a 10% commission rate. The lottery's response to those two studies was not to say that they were wrong, not to commission new studies, but to appoint an advisory committee, which included Mike McCallum of the Oregon Restaurant Association. And according to an Oregonian article on February 17, 1995, McCallum dominated that committee. And Mr. William Connerly, an economist who was also part of the committee, said, you know, I don't think that there was anybody else in the committee who made the opposite case. There's nobody who said, gee, we ought to squeeze the maximum revenue out. So the lottery appointed an advisory committee, which was dominated by Mr. McCallum, which recommended minor changes, and the lottery commission went ahead and adopted that recommendation of minor changes in the face of these two studies that said they should cut the commissions by more than two-thirds. In 1997, another study was done by a firm called KPMG Pete Marwick, which concluded that the average that very few retailers were able to offer valid evidence of any cost at all. But based on those that could offer valid evidence, it appears that their profits were, their costs were between 25 and 50% of their revenues. meaning they were getting profits of 100 to 300%. Yet in the face of that evidence, the lottery decided to barely change the rates at all. And, of course, neither in 1995 nor 1998 did the lottery say what rate of return it thought the retailers were getting. So this is an agency which consistently decided we're going to give away money to retailers in the teeth of overwhelming evidence that the retailers would keep on providing the games because they keep on making money with dramatically lower rates. I'd like to address myself to a couple of the points that Director Penn brought up. One is this idea that the business model has changed. Businesses have been bought and sold on the basis of the idea that these rates should remain the same. That, with all due respect, is essentially an argument that we've been giving away the store for years, and the retailers have come to expect us to keep giving away the store, so we have to keep giving away the store. I mean, people who bought these establishments on the assumption the rates would remain the same all knew that the contracts are periodically up for renewal and the rates could change. If they'd exercised due diligence, they would have known that studies previously suggested a 10 or 15% rate would be appropriate. And if they were so negligent that they paid an inflated price that didn't account for the possibility the lottery would come to its senses, well, maybe some of them will default on their mortgages. But somebody else will take over those taverns and continue to offer video poker. And it's not the lottery's job to subsidize people who make foolish business decisions. On the issue that you discussed with Director Penn of dominant use, dominant purpose, the Supreme Court said that if an establishment's dominant use or dominant purpose is gambling, it's illegal. The lottery's interpretation of that through administrative rule is if more than 40% of your gross revenues does not come from gambling, then your dominant use, your dominant purpose is not gambling. Now, on its face, that's absurd. And it's never been challenged in court, but if it were, it would clearly be overturned. Because that means that you can lose money hand over fist selling cigarettes at below cost, which I've been told some of these places do, but make tons of money on video poker and claim that your dominant use, your dominant purpose is not video poker. That's just plain goofy. And nobody's challenged this interpretation, but it's a goofy interpretation. So I would, maybe Representative Rosenbaum would not submit, but I would submit that there are numerous violations of the law based on the numerous retailers who have testified that they only survive based on video poker. On the topic of other states and Canada, both KPMG Pete Marwick and the Secretary of State in last year the Secretary of State did an audit. And KPMG Pete Marwick in 98 and the Secretary of State last year both said no other state has a system similar enough for comparisons to be valid. The Secretary of State found that the most valid comparison is Canada. And as Director Penn noted, the commission range in Canada is from 15% to 22.5%. The province of Alberta, which has a 15% rate, 3.2 million people, and a limit of 6,000 machines, has approximately 1,100 retailers and makes more money, and I am making the conversion from Canadian to American, than we do. Their gross in American dollars last year was about $544 million compared to our $530. Yes, they do have line games. But their net was $460 million compared to our $370 because they're paying lower commissions. And that implies that we do not, I mean, one of the inferences you can draw from that is you do not need to retain this particular network of 2,000 taverns to make a profit. It's quite possible that 1,100 taverns could give you a bigger profit. The key ingredient here is not the taverns, it's the gamblers. There's a lot of talk about the taverns are our partners. Well, the gamblers are our partners. And as long as we're offering a product which a lot of gamblers will flock to, there will be some establishments that help us offer that product and we'll make a mess of money. If there was a proposal to change the payout to the gamblers, then I'd do that with extreme caution because you don't want to make it not worth the gambler's while. But the idea that many commissioners seem to have adopted that the primary goal of the lottery is to maintain its distributor network rather than maintain its true, you know, customer base is inexplicable. And I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I do have a couple.
Senator Walker has a couple questions.
Thank you, Mr. Novick. I'm sorry I missed all of your testimony. It's scintillating. Anyone who describes something as goofy, that's pretty good. I thought that was pretty plain on its face. Let me ask you, has anyone ever filed a lawsuit to challenge the Lottery Commission's determination of dominant purpose?
I'm not aware that anybody has.
Who would have standing to do that?
An excellent question. I don't know. I don't know if it would be just pure taxpayer standing or, you know, maybe somebody who thinks that their spouse is gambling too much would have standing. To be honest, I do not know.
Well, Ms. Chair, I thought about that as Mr. Novick was testifying, and I was wondering, well, just who would have standing to challenge the Lottery Commission's determination? I'm going to ask Legislative Council about that. And I'll let you know what the answer is. Secondly, could you? I loved hearing a chronology from you about the advisory committees and all of that. Can you give me sort of a one-page list of the date the lottery was implemented, what the rates were, what changes were made, what advisory committees were appointed, what the result was, and where we are today, just on one sheet of paper?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, such a document, I believe, does exist, and I can access it. I don't have it with me today, but I can ensure that it gets to you.
All right. That would be really helpful to me. And then the question that I was going to ask Representative Rosenbaum, and I had to step out to take care of some matters, how many lottery retailers are there? She mentioned that there was $530.9 million dollars in gross sales in 2004. So how many retailers does that divide up among?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the number is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Novick. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there other questions that anyone would like to ask? Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Andy?
Hi, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andy Jordan. I'm here representing the Oregon PTA. I'm the Vice President for Legislation. I'm here. We advocate for all the children of Oregon. We are the largest and oldest child advocacy organization in the state. We have tens of thousands of members throughout the state. We are nonpartisan. We do take positions on issues. And I'm here to say that we support the 15% commission. We support, and in the last month, we have sent thousands of emails. I have copies of all those emails that we have sent to the governor, Director Penn, and to the Lottery Commission themselves, and showing our membership showing support. There was a comment made about the $68,000 profit to the taverns, and I just wanted to make sure that when we're looking at this, people keep talking about the partners and the tavern owners, and I want everyone to remember that that their contract really is with the kids. And when you're looking at that, that also equates to two starting teacher positions as well. So, and also there was another comment made about the teachers and have the teachers given, and I believe that in the last biennium, the teachers, many of the teachers in the state gave up days and worked for free, and that is also a loss for our students. So I'm here to say we support Director Penn's proposal of 15%. We support this bill, and I just want you to know that Oregon PTA members back you in supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? I'll let you folks step back, unless we have other questions, and holler at you in a little bit. We'll continue down the page. Bill Perry is next on the list, and Steve Moore. Welcome. Sounds like we started out this morning together in a very different arena.
You probably don't get paid enough to see me that often, so... For the record, my name is Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association. Chair Shields, members of the committee, I'm here in opposition, obviously, to Senate Bill 498. First of all, I kind of want to frame, we've talked about the history of this, and I do think it's important when you talk about the lottery. Remember, the lottery was voted in 1984, and it was strictly traditional games at that point. And it's ironic because the governor at the time, Vic Atiyah, was a long-time opponent of the lottery. He didn't much like it. And so what he did was he appointed Deb Potts, who was a Democrat senator at the time, to chair it, who chaired it up until 2 years ago. And he picked Deb because Debs was not a fan of the lottery either. So, I mean, it kind of sets in line a kind of a watchdog type of mentality that the lottery was started under. Obviously, video lottery didn't come in until the 1991 session when the bill was then signed by Governor Roberts. So I hear this conversation a lot about how the Lottery Commission has been pro-retailer, per se, as mentioned, and I can tell you from my experience in the building under Roberts, Kitzhaber, and Kulongowski, I don't think any of those governors would perceive themselves as pro-retailer, yet they've been picking the commissions. And the other ironic selection, I hate to single anyone out, was Don Scarborough, who was the editor at the Statesman Journal, which we know the Statesman Journal doesn't write a lot of pro-lottery retailer editorials. So, you know, I would say the commission is pro-lottery, and anything other than trying to make a balanced decision, I think, is a misperception. And whether or not they like the decisions, I'll let people argue that. But the lottery, by no means, when you look at the people that have been selecting, the people are pro-retailer, and I don't think anybody would call themselves pro-retailer if you ask them. The second misperception is I hear everybody talk about taverns. Taverns would still provide this. I just want to make sure that the committee and people understand that taverns is not what's carrying the Oregon Lottery today. When you look at the biggest retailers in the state, it's Elmer's, it's Dottie's, it's Sherry's, and some other select delis. These are restaurants. And we can talk about, and I know I'll probably get questions about dominant use and things that come up, we can talk about it, but there are customer decisions that are made in restaurants that are totally different than a tavern. And people always say that taverns are making all these money. Well, there are a few taverns at the top of the list. And it's important to note that these are not taverns that are your traditional taverns. A lot of taverns open at 4 and close at midnight. These people are making about $68,000. When you talk about the people that are actually selling the product, which is what made the lottery profitable, people that are really pushing it are the people that have basically used that to try to entice customers working with the lottery, and they open up for breakfast and lunch. And I will say that, you know, people have referred to this as a subsidy, and it's not a subsidy, but what they're doing is they're using a product, lottery, in conjunction with their food sales to be able to expand their business. And most of the dollars from the lottery in those instances are going to operational costs. He might be making $10,000 to $20,000 by expanding his business just on that, and the lottery is making hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's interesting to note that the taverns, as you say, that are becoming the big sellers have expanded their operations to lunch and breakfast, and they've done this in conjunction with the lottery as a partner. And I think to look at it any other way is not really a valid assumption. The other issue is I think it's an interesting economic standpoint to say that where is the market? What is the rate? Let's throw out all the studies that have been said. Just draw a picture with me. As Senator George mentioned, the Revenue Committee, and I've sat through these presentations for a long time. When video lottery came in 1991, you saw a huge growth rate, okay, until 1998. And then it stabled out. And there were about 2,000 retailers in 1998, and there's about 2,000 today. It fluctuates about 100. And so you have hit your maximum. I mean, that's economics at its purest. That's the amount of people in this state that think 35% is a fair and reasonable rate of return. There's not more. There's not less. Much like my membership, you know, I get about 10% to go out of business every year for a myriad of sources. Lottery has a certain amount of their businesses that go out of business every year, and they get a few. So it's a stabilized economic number. 35% gives you 2,000 retailers. Now, there's 4,500 licenses in this state that are eligible for lottery. So if it's such a good deal, why do you not have 4,500? That is the number. And so because it's been stable, you have to believe from an economic perspective that as you lower the rate, you have a potential to lose customers. That is the struggle that the Lottery Commission has to deal with. You've got a stable, basically, venue of retailers. You've had that stable venue. So they try to tinker with it. as much as they can, and they will lower it from time to time, and they've lowered it every time they've discussed it. But because you have that stable force, by making any drastic changes, I think, could throw you into possible harm from an economic perspective. And I think the 50% reduction is a pretty dramatic. And it's interesting, you know, you always hear this, that from 28.8 to 15 is only a 13% reduction. Well, it's a 50% reduction. It's 50% in my revenue. And remember, I have to do 200% increase in sales just to get back even. And so it's not just a simple reduction. I just had a 10% reduction in my revenue because, by the nearest sample I can tell, is I've been too profitable. Now I have to do 20% in increased sales just to try to get back where I started. And I will also note that this is the first time they've had a contract where the percentage rate has gone under 20%, and it's the first time they've had a cut for all retailers. And we haven't been through the first full year. So the lowest rates a lot of our retailers are just getting into, and so until that goes through, you really don't have an ability to see what those lower rates are done or what they will do to the businesses. You also look at, they talk about Canada. The basic difference between those operators and us is tribal casinos. When we've got the stabilized force that I talked about, the 2,000 retailers, the lottery has grown at about 4.7% a year since 1998. It's been a consistent kind of growth, once again, stable audience. Tribal gaming in Oregon is growing between 10 and 19%. So there's more of a market out there. The lottery is just not capturing it. And the other thing is, in Canada, they don't have tribal casinos. They've got a limited amount of machines, and they don't have tribal casinos. What happens with the tribal casinos is they can raise their payout rate. Right now, we're at 92.8. If they raise it to 94, 95, they steal my customers, and there's nothing I can do about it. So there are market forces at bear here. We've got a stabilized one. Tribal casinos are growing, and you're trying to compare, or the opponents are trying to compare us to something that basically doesn't have that tribal competitive advantage. Lottery continues to grow. The other thing that was brought up is traditional sales. The second biggest game that the lottery has is Keno. My members do 80% of that game, so we do most of the lottery sales in almost every aspect. We don't make any money off that. We've done that always as a partnership. The labor cost as it revolves around Keno is basically higher than the profit, but it's, like I said, it's always been kind of a partner. And so they've asked us to do that, and we've done it. As you see labor costs go down, or if you're trying to take money out of these retailers, you're going to see those games go, because it's easy to cut labor by cutting my Keno machines. So you've heard several retailers talk about that. With that, I would like to let Steve Moore kind of give an example of kind of his specific operation, and then I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Let's let Steve talk. Thank you for coming, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yes. My name is Steve Moore, and I wear a couple hats. First of all, I have three children in school, so I worry more about my children and their schooling than I worry about my business. Of course, my business is what's going to help them move through school, but I also want schools to have money, so I wear that hat. I also am a business owner, an employer. I own Philadelphia Steaks and Hoagies. I have two restaurants, one in Southeast Portland, the other in West Lynn. And I guess, according to some of the people who preceded me here, I'm also one of those greedy tavern owners who runs a subsidized business, which is part of the price we pay for the business we do, and it is a price. I'm going to try to explain, from my point of view, where that 35%, 33% comes from. In my business, traditionally, a third of our cost goes to cost of sales, a third goes to labor, and then we have a third left over to cover what we'll call our overhead. So 33%, 34% left over for overhead. There is very little labor involved in the poker machines. I agree with that. I have about an hour a day solid labor that's very trackable. But I also, in my food and beverage sales, I get 100% of sales. In the lottery, I only get 35% of that. So the 35% I have left over, the 34% I have left over from my food and beverage sales to address my overhead issues is almost exactly the same 34%, 35% we used to have, now 32% left over after I do the lottery sales to also address what I'll call my overhead issues. We have advertising, rent, utilities, insurance, debt service, return on investment. I've looked at that Eco Study Northwest, and they took a room, I don't know, 20 by 30, whatever the footage was, but there was no bathroom in that room. There was no toilet paper in that room, and there was no one cleaning the bathroom in that room. There was no doorway or no lock or no aisles to service that room. So it's like if I wanted to go to a food court in a major mall and say, hey, I want to rent that space right there, and I like the square footage price on the booth, but I don't want to pay common area costs. And I think that's a great fallacy in some of these studies. They're missing the fact that there's a huge common area cost involved in carrying this. Space is very, very, very valuable to us. We have retail space. It's location, location, location. I have three machines in my Portland store. I don't have five because I'm not willing to give a space to two more machines. If it was such easy money, why not? I mean, you know, there's 4,500 people, 2,500 people in the state who don't have them at all. I have three. In my second store, I only made room for two. So the lottery commission has to appeal to me. When I take my profit per square foot on my seating and tables, it's almost equal to my profit per square foot on the lottery machines that I have. You cut my rates in half, and I'm not making any promises or predictions today, but you can have all the studies you want, and I tell you, the lottery retailers, we have 2,000 studies, and they're our profit and loss statements. And we're going to look at it, and if we're going to make money, we're going to stay, and if we're not, we're going to migrate out. It's not going to happen overnight. It may go a little bit more slowly. I've been forced to make a lot of expensive changes to accommodate these machines, and I've done that. I moved them three different times in my location to get a good location so I would get play, and I've done that, and I've worked this thing hard for 12 years, and I've gotten to the point. I made about $25,000 in commissions last year. It's not a tremendous amount of money. It complements my business. I like that business. It may be up when my other business is down, but that's why I'm in it. If I took those machines out, if you cut it to $12,000, then I'm going to look at, there's a lot of alternatives I could use for that space. I could put a pool table in. I am not going to make that kind of money on quarters going to that pool table, but the traffic I draw on that pool table, I don't think it could compare to the machines today, but you cut them in half, there's probably no question that they would have to go, and I would have to look for better space or better use of that space that I have. And that's just purely a business decision. It's nothing but a business decision for me. The gamblers, I really don't know the profile of my gamblers, but I would say maybe 5 or 10% put in 60% of the money, 50% of the money. And those people, if I took the machines out, they would go. There's no question. They would find the next place up the street or the next person willing to service them. The other half are the ones who come in for lunch because they like the food and they like the atmosphere, and they drop $20 in there for lunch. You know, and they're not going to go to the deli that is predominantly poker, or they're not going to maybe go to a smoky tavern. So not all those sales will migrate. Clearly some will. You got a tough job trying to pick the right number. I'm not sure I have a magic number on it, but I'd also, you know, be careful with it because, you know, this has become an emotional decision, and, you know, some of us may be emotional about it, but in the end, when we go home and time settles out and we deal with our P&Ls, we're going to make business decisions. Another thing I keep hearing is this term subsidized taverns. I really wonder sometimes the motive of all the people who say they want the money for schools, and yet they challenge if a tavern is subsidized, it shouldn't be in business. Now, what's that going to do for schools? And what's that going to do for the state budget? And the way the law reads today, a subsidized tavern, yes, it's based on gross sales. So I talked to a friend 6 months ago. Hey, how's business going? How are you doing your food and beverage? Well, I'm kind of breaking even. What about your bar business? I'm making a little bit. What about poker? I made about $100,000. That's what floats the boat. There's no question about it. You know, so if you put them out of business because they're subsidized taverns and they wouldn't be in business without this money, that is what their business has changed into over the years. It's changed into this. This is what keeps those businesses alive. And when I hear some of the people before me, and the treasurer, when he said if they can't make it without poker, they shouldn't be in business, what does that do to the $660 or $550 million that's already coming in? That's really not addressing the issue. So if it's really anti-gambling in a cloak to slowly get rid of the gambling, then that's fine, because then that really meets their means. But I think that's all I have to say. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions?
No. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say that I appreciated his testimony. Your point of view is an important point of view. It is an emotional issue. You got that right on the head.
Yeah.
Very emotional issue.
But we will make business decisions in the end. We'll go home, we'll get over the emotion part of it, and we'll sit down and we'll look. And if we're out, we're out. If it doesn't make sense, it won't make sense. And it'll be a slow. It won't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next time they come in with a major change or some other thing, or you know, it'll be different for different people, too.
Well, that's why we're having a hearing, and I do appreciate the fact that this has been frank and intellectual and business-oriented discussion. I haven't been in a hearing about lottery commission rates for about 10 years, and I didn't want to go back after the last one. It was up in my district in Portland, and there were hundreds of very emotional people, and heat didn't do much. I always am glad when somebody's adding light, and both of you have given us a great deal of good information.
Well, we're not glad to be back either.
I forgot to touch on the graphs. I've attached some graphs. Some of the questions that were, by the way, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Association.
Yes.
Some
Bill.
Graphs that were put on here. It talks about, the first one is, where are we on overall revenue to the state? Once again, we rank second behind West Virginia. The ironic part is West Virginia does pay 42-43% of their retailers. They have both. The state does own the machines there, but they have both individual operations and casinos, so it is different. But we are second in returning total dollars to the state. The second graph talks about what percentage is returned to the state. So this is the return percentage. Rhode Island is at 73%. We're at 71.7, I believe, is what this was taken from. But we do have a tiered system. So at some point, we are going to pass Rhode Island. The difference between Rhode Island is it's three casinos. That's all they've got. They don't have individual retailers in Rhode Island. So we're definitely the highest as you look at individual operations. And the other is a per terminal return. Rhode Island and Delaware are obviously high. Rhode Island, once again, is a casino environment. Delaware is a racetrack and a high life facility, so they've got two facilities.
They've only got the two?
Yeah. And so
I was noticing on your first chart with regard to Delaware that it was $250 million, and yet it's a state that's a fraction of the size of Oregon in population. I mean, I know they only have one congressman.
Yeah.
So they must get a lot of interstate traffic.
Yeah, I mean, people on the East Coast travel from community to community you know, like crazy. So you're going to get a lot more travel and play in it. And then the last graph is a per terminal. And like I said, Delaware and Rhode Island are higher, but they do have a casino-type environment where we don't. And then you look at Louisiana and Montana, which are at the bottom of almost every one of these graphs. They're the only other state that is limited to video poker like we are. Every other state has some sort of a line game, and so their percentage payouts are, I think Montana's at 85% for the retailer, and Louisiana's like at 72-73% for the retailer, if I got my numbers correct.
Okay, thank you for the information. I appreciate it, gentlemen. I've got a few more people here. Is Marianne Geist still here?
She had to leave.
Oh, okay. She had to leave. Tricia Smith and Richard Burke. Excuse me, but who ends up at the dais at the same time as a pure gamble, shall we say?
We get along great.
We
That's
do.
That's fine. And Tricia, would you...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm just running over here to get one of these things.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I'm the Government Relations Specialist for the Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA is a union that represents nearly 20,000 professionals that work in Oregon's Head Starts, K-12 schools, ESDs, and community colleges, and park and recreation districts. They're the classified and certified education professionals who perform every non-management function in our schools today, from teaching our kids the way the teachers and instructional assistants do, to our cooks, custodians, and bus drivers who make sure that our children are secure while they're in our charge. I'm before you today to offer our strong support for Senate Bill 498, which sets an appropriate and important boundary on video lottery retailer compensation rates set by the Oregon Lottery Commission. Oregon schools have been struggling with increasing demands and declining revenue for more than a decade. Our students have lost thousands of hours of instruction time, as well as entire programs like music, art, honors classes, and sports. The things that keep our kids interested in school while we're teaching them everything else they need to know. Now, more than ever, we need the help of the legislature to find every dollar available to us to put back into our schools. As you know, all lottery revenue are constitutionally directed to the exclusive benefit of education, economic development, parks, and salmon habitat restoration. The original legislative authorization of video poker was a very controversial issue at the time. I remember it very well. And it was a very difficult choice for legislators to make. In the end of the day, they chose to authorize video poker because of the need to provide additional revenue to the state services that the lottery was designed to provide revenue for. While the legislature was making these decisions, there was some discussion about video retailer compensation rates and whether or not the legislature should set them and what those appropriate rates should be. In the end, the legislature did not set specific rates because they had no experience from which to draw reasonable conclusions about what those rates should be. They chose instead to direct the Lottery Commission to maximize revenues for programs while providing retailers with a reasonable rate of return. They envisioned this constitutional and statutory guidance would be the foundation of the Commission's rate setting and then would be supplemented by economic studies based on experience. However, the intent of the voters and the legislature has not been realized in this area. Time and again, the Lottery Commission, bowing to political pressure exerted by retailers, has ignored its obligation to maximize lottery revenue and has set video lottery compensation rates that have vastly exceeded the reasonable rate of return for retailers suggested by several economic studies.
Tricia, let me interrupt your testimony there. Do you think those who voted on the lottery... I'm thinking of guys like Glenn Otto, who were here in the Senate when it was voted. He had a very key vote. Do you think that today they, if you could poll them, they would think that reasonable rate of return, the language was really complied with or not? I'm asking you to speculate. I know that. But
well, you sure are, Mr. Chair. I can say some things that now and then that are considered uppity, but I would not speculate about what Glenn Otto might think if he were here today looking at this issue. I do know that this was a very difficult decision for the legislature to make in 1991, and the only reason it was made was because of the serious fiscal crisis the state found itself in, and that this was a way to raise money for the state. This was never, ever meant to be an economic boon to a certain segment of our business community. It was never designed to be that.
I'll let you continue.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
I lost my head there for a minute.
Today we have more than a decade of this dismal rate-setting history of the Lottery Commission, which we believe is in violation of the Lottery Commission's legal obligation and is costing Oregon schools millions of dollars every year. Although the recent proposal by the lottery director indicates movement in the right direction, it's clear to us that without intervention, we can expect the Commission to continue to set rates that shortchange schools and other programs in order to provide inappropriate subsidies to bars, taverns, and restaurants. Senate Bill 498 recognizes this long history of excessive rate setting by establishing an upper limit of 15% of net receipts as the amount the Lottery Commission may grant retailers. They clearly need this direction in the law because, by their own admission, they are more concerned about protecting retailers' profits than maximizing revenue to schools and other programs, as is their legal responsibility. In its most recent rate setting, the Commission acknowledged the rates were too high but declined to set them at reasonable levels because they were concerned about the effect that might have on retailers who have become dependent on the excessive profits they receive from video gaming machines in their establishments. We believe this concern is not only misplaced, but indicates that the lottery has allowed retailers to become casinos, another violation of the Constitution. According, as you've heard in earlier testimony, according to a Supreme Court decision, a business that is dependent on gaming revenues for viability is a casino and is illegal in Oregon unless that business is a recognized Native tribe on their own property. Every credible study of video lottery retailer rates conducted since its inception in Oregon has indicated that 15% is at the upper end of reasonableness as a rate of return for retailers. Indeed, studies indicate the commission rates of as little as 5% would provide a reasonable profit for retailers. If video lottery commissions were held to 15%, our schools would see an increase of $85 million a biennium, not counting the additional revenue expected with line games. Opponents may tell you that this bill will have no effect on commission rates because multi-year contracts were just recently renewed. I suggest to you that Senate Bill 498 is very timely because, as you may know, these rates have been appealed as illegally excessive. If the Court of Appeals agrees with our position, they will likely set aside the rates as excessive and direct the Commission to establish appropriate rates. If Senate Bill 498 is the law, the Lottery Commission will have the direction it needs at exactly the right time. Opponents may tell you that despite what the economic studies say, 15% is not enough, and that retailers will be unwilling to have video gaming machines in their establishments if the rates are reduced. Perhaps that's true for some retailers, but it's hard to believe that everyone would turn down so much profit for so little effort. With the expansion of video gaming to include line games, this seems to us to be even more unbelievable. However, if some retailers decide to abandon video gaming, that certainly is their right. The state then has the option of adding new retailers, increasing the number of machines in remaining establishments, or finding another revenue source for schools and other programs altogether. What we do not think is an option for you as the legislature and for the state is to continue to provide vast government subsidies, millions of dollars every year, to bars and taverns at the expense of our schools. We are long past the time when we did not know what a reasonable rate of return for these enterprises is, and we are long past the time for the Lottery Commission to be required to follow its legal direction and meet its legal obligation. We urge you to give the Lottery Commission the limit it so desperately needs, and schools and other designated services the additional revenue they so desperately need, by passing Senate Bill 498. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I do have a question for you before I let you off the hook here. How involved were you and other associations like yours in the 6 months or whatever preceding the most recent change in the rates?
We were involved in appealing to the commission to lower the rates, and we have appealed the commission's rate administrative rule that sets the rate to the Court of Appeals. So okay. We have been involved.
So you're the people that did the appeal then?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I will tell you, Mr. Chair, that we regret not having been more involved from the inception of video poker in the Lottery Commission's setting of rates. We probably should have been making more noise 5 or 6 years ago about this issue. Unfortunately, we did not, but we certainly don't think late is too late when you discover that the laws are not being followed as they should.
Okay. Thank you. Your turn.
Yep, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd first of all like to say I'm sympathizing with your cough. I'm just getting over a flu myself. I hope you feel better soon.
I'm 10 times more alive than I was a few days ago. I've only lost 13 pounds in the last week and a half. I'd suggest that as a great weight loss clinic for anybody to try.
Whatever works, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, and the organization I represent, the Libertarian Party of Oregon, is a member of the New Budget Coalition. And as you may recall, we have supported the policy of funding schools first and funding them fully. So I come to you as somebody who is concerned about education and wants to make sure that our children get a good education. I'd like to key on a different segment of this bill. Everyone here has been talking about the commission rate, whether 15% is too high or too low, or whether it's a subsidy or not. I will touch on that a little bit later. But what concerns me is not the rate, but the cap itself. Now, I'm going to submit to you in my testimony that regardless of what rate you set, a cap, either a high cap or a low cap, is bad policy. I bring back to your memory Nixon's wage and price controls in the 1970s. Inflation was regarded as to be out of control. The president imposed wage and price controls to get a handle on it. And what we found were, you know, distortions of the economy that created lots of dysfunctions that were so severe as those wage and price controls were ultimately removed. Now, as you have noted in your questions to people testifying, this is a very complicated issue. There are many kinds of business, many kinds of businesses, many kinds of business environments, some of which have been created by past policy set by the Oregon legislature, and it's going to be difficult to come up with a one-size-fits-all scenario. This is an evolving issue. We have tribal casinos that are growing in their ability to market. There's talk of tribal casinos in Portland that would impact quite a bit. We have evolving tax rates. There are people at different legislative sessions that say we need to increase business taxes or lower taxes or what have you. We've got internet gambling, which is something that I think is coming up on the horizon that could impact, you know, what the lottery is able to earn and what restaurant owners and tavern owners are able to earn. So the point is, what you have here is a dynamic environment, and it's never good policy to place a static, unchanging solution over a dynamic environment. Okay, let's say for the argument that 15% is the best commission rate today. It might not be tomorrow. This bill contains no provision for a review after 5 years or 2 years or 10 years. It's not indexed to anything like inflation or whether or not segments of the market shift. It's just 15%. And if a change was required, either up or down, the effort required to change it through subsequent legislation would be very onerous indeed. So while you may be helping an environment today, you may be imperiling schools or business tomorrow. And for these reasons, even if the Lottery Commission decides to set 15% today, a cap like this, or a basement, set in law, I submit to you, is bad policy. There are also a couple of issues. I do want to take an issue with respect to my friend here of the term subsidy. Because of state law, we have said you cannot gamble. And then, because of state law, which was an environment, you know, up until 1984, there could be no lottery. If I was a restaurant and I tried to set up a numbers game, I'd be thrown in jail. Okay, so now the state says, you can have a numbers game, but we're going to run it. And so I said, well, all right, I'd like to run my own, but this is the only game in town, I'll do it. And then they have the gall to say, we're subsidizing you now. When in fact, the subsidy is an artificial situation created by the fact that people were previously artificially banned from running their own games. So, you know, let's see this for what it is. It's government limiting what business can do and then setting parameters. It's not a subsidy at all. They're helping each other, and that's always a productive thing. Also, I've heard nobody talk about the income taxes. If you lower commission rates, you will have lower profits, and there will be lower income tax revenues. And I haven't heard anybody mention that. Not to mention, if some of these taverns shut down in certain areas and jobs are lost, what's it going to cost to put these people on the social net? Maybe these aren't large factors. I don't know. But I haven't heard anybody talk about them. But whatever the number is you come up with, 50% or 2% or 10 or whatever it is, you know, I ask that, you take another approach, vote no on SB 498, and say no to artificial static caps to a dynamic environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? If not, I've got two more people who signed up to testify. Petra Berger from Stand for Children and Jody Weiser. Or is it Weiser? Welcome to our committee. Go ahead, introduce yourself, and hold.
Thank you. I'm Joanne Weiser. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And actually, I think it was like 1990 that I was a signer on a petition to lower, an initiative to lower the rate. We didn't go forward with that petition because of all the other stuff that was up. But I've been watching this issue for some time, and occasionally I spend time in a tavern, a deli, or a gambling house, or a restaurant that has video poker machines. In fact, somebody saw my car in front of one here in Salem the other day, and they were shocked. They couldn't believe that was my car there, which explains in part why we keep hearing the Restaurant Owners Association say, why don't 2,500 restaurants who could have businesses have liquor licenses, they could have video games, why don't they? Well, part of the reason is, if I see that sign, I don't usually go there because it's not the kind of place I go when I want to eat and drink, generally speaking. And I think that that hides the business decision that many restaurateurs make. They have a liquor license. They don't want to have a lottery game in their business. And it's just a reflection of the variety of businesses that you would expect in any community. I wasn't planning on speaking today, but when I heard Dottie's characterized as a deli, I had to speak. If you haven't been to a Dottie's, you should go. I've spent probably 8 hours in Dottie's. I have never seen a meal served. I have never seen a sandwich served. I have seen somebody buy a candy bar, and I've seen people get free coffee and free Coke, but they are gambling houses. They sell cigarettes very cheaply. They sell other video products, and people come in and they sign up on a sign on the board and wait their turn to use a gambling machine. And so I think that whether this is a gambling house or not really is not a question. I think that we have many, many of them, and they're some of our most productive retailers. And that's just a reality of what's out there. They offer food. One of the women who works in them says, oh, we have some great food. And I've eaten some of their food, and it's as good as in many restaurants because they buy the prepackaged food that's served in other places. And there you can get something for $2.99 that would cost $8.99 at a better place to eat. But people don't come there to eat. I sat recently at the local tavern at lunchtime and watched people coming in and eating, buying coffee, and playing at video games. It was a full-service tavern. People were doing all sorts of things. There were some people shooting pool. The machines were taking up the same kind of space maybe as one pool table, and they were getting more customers and providing no more or less work than a pool table would provide. There was very little contact. The other evening, when a friend of mine and I, on our way home from being in Salem, decided to stop at a place with a lottery insignia and see what it looked like, we saw 1 to 3 customers at 5 machines in this particular tavern. The barmaid provided the following services. She took and delivered a drink order. She nodded twice as new gamblers entered. She asked if they wanted service, and she emptied an ashtray. Meanwhile, many 20s went into those machines. There wasn't much cost. The space that was utilized was a wide area on the way to the restrooms. We heard when they were taking testimony about lowering the rates, what is it now, maybe 9 months ago, that there were huge threats that there'd be a mass exodus. The Oregon Restaurant Association predicted in a survey they did that 15% of the bars and taverns would drop video poker if there was any cut in the rate. Those false threats were followed by a 98% renewal rate. And if they close, it really won't matter because the gamblers go from gambling place to gambling place as it is in a single evening often anyway. They have their favorite people just like you have your favorite hairdresser or your favorite bartender. So they kind of like to check in with people if they're the kind of people who want to gamble for several hours. Restaurants are put out that some retailers have made purchases based on this expectation. Well, I have been a business owner, and if I'm making a business decision, I do some research, and if they had so much as Googled Oregon Lottery Commissions on their computer before they made a purchase, they would know that lottery commissions in the state are up for grabs all the time, and they have been on a downward slant, and if somebody is building a bowling alley, he's probably got a 30-year contract, not a 6-year contract with his mortgage holder, and so I think the argument is that probably proves that argument is really false. A few retailers put arguments forth that they've had to drop health insurance. I didn't hear that argument today. But in fact, others of them argue that the increase in the minimum wage is going to drive them out of business. And so those, again, are just arguments that are pushed forward because they sound good. They, I don't think, are based in reality very often at all. And finally, we are adding line games to the machines now. We will be providing everything. They will provide nothing new, but we will be putting in their establishments games that are more popular, according to everybody's experiences where they've used them, than the current games. So whatever business they actually get in food service or whatever out of providing video lottery games in their facilities will just go up because we've added line games at zero cost in any way to the retailers. I think that when an earlier speaker spoke and said, you know, our real partners are the gamblers. They're the ones that are making voluntary tax payments. They're their only new taxes we've gotten since we started funding schools so much more by the state rather than by property taxes with Measure 5. And I think that's been about 17 years now. Basically, the lottery is our only new significant tax. And our taxpayers are voluntary players of the lottery. And we really only need to ask ourselves, are they getting what they want? And can we find somebody who will provide them what they want? And it's been proven pretty well that we've been quite successful. And if some of the current retailers leave, others will appear, I'm positive. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We are running pretty late here, so I would like to ask Petra.
Yes.
Is that right? For you to quickly comment. I had one other request. It may get a few minutes at the end here, but it wasn't on our list. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, my name is Petra Berger of Salem, Oregon, and I'm a member of the Salem-Kaiser Stanford Children Organization. My background is that I'm a quality management consultant in education and healthcare, and I also have been a manager of psychiatric hospital programs for children and adolescents. And I'd like to thank you today for the opportunity to testify in support, strong support, of State Bill 498. I would like to offer a little bit different perspective to school funding that I have not seen yet in print anywhere. The aim of Stand for Children is, of course, to achieve an increase in education funding significantly above the governor's proposed $5 billion budget. Better funding is needed to avoid another short school year, to upgrade outdated school textbooks, and for other expenditures. But worst of all, in my mind, is that our class sizes have increased substantially. The ratio of students to teachers in Oregon is the fourth highest in the U.S. We have the second most crowded elementary classrooms in America, 30% larger than the rest of the country. Therefore, my specific focus for today is on smaller class sizes and on a sufficient number of qualified teachers in all of our schools. In particular, I would like to discuss one critical aspect of the role of public school teachers that is not often talked about, and that is of a child advocate. This role is extremely broad, demanding, and complex, and cannot be accomplished in a classroom of 35 children. For example, we expect our teachers, of course, to effectively teach subjects of reading, math, and science while meeting increased standards of the No Child Left Behind Act. However, our educational challenge is not only about the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also about the fourth R, social relationship skills, in order to produce mature and responsible adult citizens who can effectively function in the world of work and as responsible heads of household. Thus, our teachers must also teach logical thinking and problem-solving skills for daily living, continuously provide extra attention for kids unable to concentrate on learning or who have persistent behavioral problems which disturbs the learning of all the other students in the classroom, pay attention to kids being bullied as a red flag of future problems and offer intervention, screen kids at serious psychological risk in order to intercept future disasters like school shootings or ongoing abuse in the home and community, and make referrals and do outreach with parents on a continuous basis about special needs of their kids during their already 50 hours plus work week. In summary, we expect our teachers to be all things to all people and to create a school environment where kids can thrive and grow and become self-sustaining citizens. However, a highly overcrowded classroom may not be optimal to achieve that goal. Thus, one must ask, what good would it do a restaurant owner or any other business if in just another few years several hundred more young Oregonians are not able to hold a job or unable to support themselves and their family as young consumers, or worse still, are in and out of jail or other type of detention that demands large amounts of public resources. With Oregon facing economic hard times, if not fiscal crisis, a logical and realistic balance must be established between strong social programs that are a true investment in Oregon's future and fair opportunities to assure a successful business community. Without a doubt, restaurant owners are an important part of Oregon's business community, but they must also be real partners in achieving the total well-being of our state. Thus, everyone must responsibly share in the economic burden in times of budget shortfall. Common business sense would tell us that a 15% profit at a very low cost of overhead is a respectable result by any measure of accounting. This should be especially true in hard economic times for everyone. Then I also had comments about the system in Alberta, Canada. I know we are running out of time.
We're out of time.
Yes. And that is my primary presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. Grover, I'm going to give you a couple minutes to have...
Mr. Chair, could I just make a comment to the last presenter?
Yes, please.
I just really appreciate what you said about teachers. I have been in schools for quite a bit over the last 14 years, and I just think that what we are asking of our teachers today, in contrast to what teachers were asked to do when my children were in school, is amazing. And I just don't think... everybody, if they haven't been in a school for a while, realize what teachers have faced. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I, too, thank you. I appreciate both what you said from Stand for Children and what the only one that signed up as a private citizen had to say. Thank you very much. Grover, come on up.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Berger, thank you very much for giving me the last 4 minutes of the day. I had not signed up, but having listened to the testimony, I feel compelled to make a point or two. And as almost everything else in this building, there is another side of the story. And I represent the Oregon State Elks Association. We have over 45,000 members in 56 lodges throughout the state. Most of the lodges, 50 of them, have video poker in them. Not all lodges, but 50 out of the 56. And they contribute as an organization in cash. This is an annual report from the most recent years. They contribute $1,725,000, $1,725,531 in cash. to their various activities in the local communities. So it's a relevant figure because they also receive income from the lottery, and I'll get into that to show you the difference. So that's the starting point. We are 50 lodges. In addition to the cash, they also contribute non-cash services, and that's calculated to total equals $6,496,000. But $1,725,000 is cash, period. Okay, I have material I received in the recent few days from the lottery, which is very cooperative. They support their retailers. Even when you ask them for information, they'll make it available to you. So this is a report from June 29 of 03 to June 26 of 04. So it's almost comparable to the exact year that I read you the other figures from. So the total video sales, $4,208,299, generated a commission of $1,458,367,000, or an average, Mr. Chairman, and these people have referred to all 69,000 and all these high-rolling numbers, the average Elks Lodge earned $29,167.34. Let's start over and say, okay, let's suppose we reduce the commission to 15%. So you take 15% of the gross sales and you generate $631,244. You divide that by the 50 lodges, and you come down to the astronomical figure of $12,624. So that's a long ways away from the figures that have been testified to before, and those are the facts. So would you expect a lodge to remain doing this line of activity for $12,624 a year? It's a value judgment. I'd like to make two points. One is the ability of the lodges to grow. The implication from a lot of the testimony and in the newspaper is it doesn't really matter because they can close down an establishment because somebody across the street will open another establishment. That doesn't apply to the lodges. They're not open to the public. It's a fraternal organization. And so we're a little bit different than most of the people, than all of the others who've testified. And if you were to close down an Elks Lodge, for example, and somebody else opened up a cafe or restaurant across the street, do you believe that new business person would contribute $1 million+ in cash or $6 million total service to a community? No way. So it would do a lot of damage to close down these lodges on the basis of this lottery problem. The last witness, one of them said, if they close it, it really won't matter. Mr. Chairman, I submit that's just not accurate. Now, finally, my friend Glenn Otto, whom you ask about, one of my best friends in the latter part of his life, fishing buddy every single year. I think, you ask, what do you think he would believe? I believe Glenn would say this is a reasonable system. It's generating hundreds of millions of dollars for Oregon, particularly for the schools. Let's preserve it rather than destroy it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And with that, our hearing is adjourned.